Metalogue to the Magic Flute. Relax, maestro. Put your baton down. Only the fogiest of the old will frown if you the trials of the prince prorogue to let Zoroastro speak the metalogue. A form acceptable to us, although unclassed by Aristotle or Boileau. No modern audience finds it incorrect, for interruption is what we expect. Since that new god, the paid announcer, rose, who with his quasi-oceanic prose cuts in upon the lovers, halts the band, to name a sponsor or to praise a brand. Not that I have a product to describe that you could wear or cook with or imbibe. You cannot hoard or waste a work of art. I come to praise, but not to sell, Mozart, who came into this world of war and woe at Salzburg just 200 years ago, when kings were many and machines were few, and open atheism something new. It makes the servant this New Yorker sore to think sheer genius had to stand before a mere archbishop with uncovered head. But Mozart never had to make his bed. The history of music, as of man, will not go cancrezans. And no ear can recall what, when the Archduke Francis reigned, was heard by years whose treasure hoard contained a flute already, but as yet no ring. Each age has its own mode of listening. We know the Mozart of our father's time was gay, rococo, sweet, but not sublime, a Viennese Italian. That is changed since music critics learned to feel estranged. Now it's the Germans he's classed amongst, a Geist whose music was composed from angst. At international festivals enjoys an equal status with the 12-tone boys. He awes the lovely and the very rich, and even those divertimenti which he wrote to play while bottles were uncorked, my lord chewed noisily, my lady talked, are heard in reverent silence, score on knees, like quartets by the deafest of the bees. What next? One can no more imagine how, in concert halls 200 years from now, when the Mozartian sound waves move the air, the conoscenti will be moved, than dare predict how high orchestral pitch will go, how many tones will constitute a row, the tempo at which regimented feet will march about the moon, the form of suite for piano in a post-atomic age prepared by some contemporary cage. An opera composer may be vexed by later umbrage taken at his text. Even Macaulay's schoolboy knows today what Robert Graves or Margaret Mead would say about the status of the sexes in this play, writ in those ages of barbaric dark, twixt modern mom and Bronze Age matriarch. Where are the Roman fathers and their creed? Ah, where, sighs Mr. Mitty, where indeed? And glances sideways at his vital spouse, whose rigid jawline and contracted brows express her scorn and utter detestation of Roman views on female education. In 1956, we find the Queen, a highly paid and most efficient dean, whom, as we all know, really runs the college, Zoroastro tolerated for his knowledge, teaching the history of ancient myth at Bryn Mawr, Vassar, Bennington, or Smith. Pamina may a time researcher be, to let Tamino take his PhD, acquiring manly wisdom as he wishes, while changing diapers and doing dishes. Sweet Papagena, when she's time to spare, listens to Mozart operas on the air. Though Papagena, one is sad to feel, prefers the jukebox to the glockenspiel. And how is, what was easy in the past, a democratic villain to be cast? Monostatos must make his bad impression without a race, religion, or profession. A work that lasts 200 years is tough. An opera, as God knows, must stand enough. What greatness made, small vanities abuse. What must they not endure? The diva whose fioritura and climactic note the silly old composer never wrote. Conductor X, that overrated bore, who alters tempi and who cuts the score. The rector Y, who with ingenious wit places the wretched singers in the pit while dancers mime their roles. Z, the designer, who sets the whole thing on an ocean liner, the girls in shorts, the men in yachting caps. Yet genius triumphs over all mishaps, survives a greater obstacle than these, translation into foreign operas. English sopranos are condemned to languish because our tenors have to hide their anguish. It soothes the Frank, it stimulates the Greek. Genius surpasses all things, even chic. We who know little, which is just as well, about the future, can at least foretell whether they live in airborne nylon cubes, practice group marriage, or are fed through tubes, that crowds 200 years from now will press, absurd their hair, ridiculous their dress, and pay in currencies however weird to hear Zarastro booming through his beard. Sharp connoisseurs approve if it is clean, the F in alt of the nocturnal queen. Some uncouth creature from the Bronx amaze Park Avenue by knowing all the K's. How seemly then to celebrate the birth of one who did no harm to our poor earth, created masterpieces by the dozen, indulged in toilet humour with his cousin, and had a pauper's funeral in the rain, the like of whom we shall not see again. How comely also to forgive. We should, as Mozart, were he living, surely would, remember kindly Salieri's shade, accused of murder and his works unplayed. Nor, while we praise the dead, should we forget we have Stravinsky, bless him, with us yet. Basta. Maestro, make your minions play. In all hearts, as in our finale, may reason and love be crowned, assume their rightful sway.